You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello and welcome to the latest episode of Stanley on the North Bank. This is a Swansea City podcast from us here at Wales Online. My name is Matt Davis and I've got Andrew Gwillan with me again today. We've got two games to talk about. A good week for Graham Potter. Let's talk about the Blackburn game first. Not one for the... Well, the first half wasn't one for the faint-hearted, really, was it? It was certainly a game of two halves, should we say. If we're going to start
the
off
cliche,
with the
yeah. No, I mean, it really was. Wasn't it? I mean, I think first half at Swansea was just a bit flat. And I think as a result, the atmosphere was quite flat. Arguably the most noise during the opening 45 minutes was Tony Mowbray bellowing instructions at his Blackburn players. So, not the most promising start after a bit of a frustrating afternoon at Villa the previous Saturday. But the changes at half-time, Leroy Fer and Jay Fulton coming on, the change of shape going from a 4-3-3 back to sort of more like a 4-2-3-1. And Swansea were vastly improved in the second half. It was 3-1. It could quite conceivably have been 4-5. It was quite astonishing, really, just how quickly the game shifted once Jay Fulton's shot had sort of come back off the post and the keeper to put Swansea level. It felt like there was only one winner from there. Although it should be said, Christopher Nordfelt did make an excellent save from Bradley Dack late on when it was still 2-1, and Swansea went straight up the other end and scored. So. In a way, a bit like seeing the best and worst of Swansea. It's Halloween time. It's a bit Jekyll and Hyde, I suppose. Which has been the story of the season, really. But I think we had it within 90 minutes there, rather than week to week. There are times when they would struggle to knit things together, and there would be other times when it clicks, and they'll be very, very effective. And I thought that second half was right up there with anything they've produced under Potter. Blackburn, from having been so comfortable, they were run ragged during that second half.
Difficult, really. Should Potter did he get it wrong from the start, or should we be praising him for changing it immediately at half time? Which way should we look at that debate?
Oh, I think he says it best himself, doesn't he? If you win, you're a genius. If you lose, everyone thinks you're an idiot. So, for the 4-3-3, he had Kyle Norton sort of as the third man in there. And I think, when Norton's played in midfield before and done well there before, he's played in a deep two rather than as part of a three. And I thought he looked a bit lost being the third man. He didn't quite know where to be, where to press, where to drop off into. And, that's not necessarily his fault. That's a guy who is a full-back by trade, playing out of position. You could be critical, but at the same time, I think they changed back to 4-2-3-1 after the penalty. Norton went to full-back and Roberts was pushed on into that right-wing slot. And then the two changes at half-time worked, they worked tremendously well. They made a huge difference. So, I think any manager who can spot when he's made, for want of a better word, a mistake, and acts to rectify it quickly and effectively, I don't think you can quibble too much, really. And it's about results, isn't it? I think if you're making those changes and they're effective and you win, people are going to be happy enough to roll with it. And he's very difficult to second guess, isn't he?
I
think you have to accept that with a young squad, he's going to be mindful of overworking people. I think that's why Joe Roden came out of the team against Blackburn. It's just little opportunities just for a little bit of respite so the fatigue doesn't kick in, because a lot of these guys are playing their first full season of senior football, and whether we like it or not, and we would probably all prefer a more settled side. If he thinks that's in the best interests of their long-term development, then so be it. He's the manager and he's paid the money to make those decisions. So I think it's it's probably preferable to how stubborn some previous managers were before in sticking with things that didn't work.
You mentioned Nordfeldt. Perhaps let's focus on that save that he made at a key point in the game. A very good save. You know, got down well to his left, and quick distribution then led to the goal. For the third.
And in fairness, Dim, we've spoken about it quite a bit, haven't we? And I think a lot of supporters. I think before the Villa game, you know, I think we put a tweet out through our official account asking people who they'd start in goal, and almost unanimously it was that most people would want Erwin Mulder. And I understand that, you know, like with the form he was in. But Nordfeldt, to be fair to him, I thought he got better against Blackburn. I thought he was better again against Reading. He, you know, inevitably for someone who'd sat on the sidelines with injury and the form of Mulder, it's taken him a little bit of time. But he is starting to look more comfortable and more assured, you know, particularly in the way he plays out from the back. I mean, you know, he does. I think he causes a bit of consternation among most of us when we're watching. But
it was
stats,
that one scuff, wasn't it?
It was, yeah. At the bottom of the studs, wasn't it, rather than a proper pass. But if you look at his stats, he's the best goalkeeper in the Championship in terms of pass accuracy. You know, and he's in terms of head to heads in games. You know, I mean, Yacola, the Reading keeper at the weekend, was only at 59%, and Nordfeldt's, you know, I forget now, but Nordfeldt's was in the high 80s. So if you're looking to play out from the back, and you're happy enough with him as a shot stopper, I don't think he's as authoritative as Mulder is coming for crosses and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, a clean sheet, and, you know, you look at a lot of Swansea's goals do start from him, either throwing out or playing out.
Yeah.
So, you know, we've questioned that decision, but I think you have to give a bit of credit where it's due. You know, I think he is starting to look more at ease with each passing week as he just gets those minutes back under his belt.
Yeah, okay.
It's still harsh on Mulder. It really is. But, you know, it's not meant to, you know, I suppose it's not meant to be easy, is it? You know, I'm sure it's not an easy choice for Graham Potter to make, but, you know, it's the harsh realities of, you know, life as a footballer, particularly as a, you know, as a goalkeeper.
I suppose from Mulder's point of view, he's got to stay on his toes, because at any point he could be back in the team.
Well, I was going to say, yeah. You know, Nordfeldt could keep four clean sheets in a row and Mulder might come back in. So, yeah, you know, he's got to keep on his toes. He's, you know, he will be disappointed. I think Potter's alluded to that, that, you know, he's not been entirely happy. And, you know, who can blame him? But you wouldn't want the guy to be happy to be dropped after a run of form like that. You would want him to be pretty upset. So the thing is, he's got to channel that into doing his best to get back in the team, and if the chance comes his way, to make sure he takes it. Which, you know, we're going to touch on some of Leighton James's comments in his column, but, you know, one of the things Leighton said, which didn't make the cut in the final column, but he was saying that he felt there wasn't a great deal to choose between the two keepers. You know, he'd be quite happy with one or the other. You know, and if you look at Swansea's clean sheet record this season, you know, it's hard to argue, really. They've, you know, they've both played their part in what's pretty been a pretty mean defensive record so far.
Okay, let's move on to Reading then. One guy in the press bench definitely under club when it came to layers.
Yeah.
I was absolutely freezing.
Yeah. Stole all the sweets. Standard behaviour.
It was good, though, to see Oliver McBurney back scoring goals, though, because he does so much work off the ball. It goes through a tremendous amount of work rate. And he perhaps hasn't been rewarded for that over the last sort of three or four outings. And it was good then to see him get his brace, even though it was a penalty and a goal from 4 yards. But you still got to take them, haven't you?
Yeah, it was almost as good as seeing you bring up the coffees at half time for the change, you know, which is always appreciated. Yeah. Oh, look, it'll do him the power of good, because even though I felt his all round performances were still pretty good, you know, we all inevitably judge strikers on how many goals they score. It's just the currency that strikers trade in, isn't it? You know, and when strikers go on stints where they don't score, then people like us and, you know, supporters notice and we bring it up. So, you know, he can see how important it is. And I think you look at how much work he puts in off the ball. You know, he drops deep to link play, he pulls wide. And then, you know, but one of the problems he has when he does that is that he then has to turn on his heels and try and get up and get into the box. You know, he's the sole striker, isn't he? So, you know, I personally don't think that's just about him. You know, I think when he drops deep, you know, I do kind of feel that others could run beyond him. You know, it's not like it's got to be dependent on Ollie McBurney making a run into the box. You know, there's players behind him who've chipped in with goals. You know, if the wide man's got a bit of room to deliver, then, you know, there's no reason why guys like Selina or Fulton and people like that can't be getting into the box. So, but yeah, pleased for him. You know, I think it was playing on his mind a little bit. You know, I dare say he wouldn't admit it, but, you know, from a couple of post-match interviews, you know, things like, you know, a bit of a joke, but, you know, if the boys want to pass to me in front of goal, then they're welcome to do so. You know, it inevitably plays on your mind. And yeah, really pleased for him. You know, look, the penalty was a big one for him because obviously he missed the only other penalty he'd taken this season against Preston. So, you know, you had no hesitation, pick the ball up, put it in the back of the net, and then, you know, a nice close range finish from an excellent Daniel James cross at the end. So, you know, ideal, really. You know, your main striker, your top scorer is back with a brace going into two away games where, you know, Swansea have a real opportunity to build now. Yeah. They got back-to-back wins for the first time since the opening week of the season.
McBurney got the two goals. He wasn't, though. I don't think he was your match pick, was he? I think
Dan James.
Although
it must be said, there were a handful of candidates.
Yeah,
there
were.
You know? I mean, Selina. I thought Selina played really well. Grimes, Van der Hoorn had an excellent game as a back.
Yeah, wasn't it? But let's stick with Dan James because I've got it written down on my notes here. He was brilliant, wasn't he? I mean, he gave Yadam a hell of an afternoon.
Yeah, I mean, the only quibble he would have is his finishing does need a bit of work. You know, I think the chance he missed in the first half where McBurney and Fulton had set him up, you know, you've got to be tucking those away.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's 20 years old and at the moment he looks Swansea's greatest attacking threat. You know, he just looks like he can make things happen. You know, I thought the penalty was a case in point. You know, you're saying, you know, Yadam, obviously someone Swansea targeted and nearly signed just over a year ago, but I mean, by consensus, he is among the quickest fullbacks in the Championship.
Yeah.
And for the penalty, Dan James just left him for dead. You know, I know Yadam had to turn, but he was past him in the blink of an eye, and in the end he just felt that he had no, you know, he almost felt like he couldn't let him shoot. He had to foul him. It was better to foul him than maybe let him have a shot and finish. And the thing,
ridiculous tackle.
It was, but that's what pressure does to you, isn't it? You know, that's what pressure of having someone come past you in that area. You know, your mind, you know, it's not a rational decision making process then, is it? It's almost like, well, I've got to stop him, I've got to stop him. And he hauls him down and penalty. And, you know, second half, you know, he's a bit quiet after the break. Swansea had a bit of a sort of blip, really, and Reading came back into it. But he's got that ability to keep making those runs, those high energy sprints, again and again and again. And part of the problem then, if you're a fullback, is that you might get the better of him a couple of times, but you know he's going to keep coming at you, and eventually it'll wear you down because you don't have to deal with someone coming at you with that sort of speed and that sort of trickery. And the thing with that Daniel James does well is that, okay, he can take you down the line to the byline, but he's got enough quality that he can come in field and he can link with others in the centre of the pitch. So, I mean, he's been a revelation over the last month, and you know, I just think we probably just got to be a bit wary of not building him up too much. He is still a young lad, you know. He's only a handful of first-team appearances into his Swansea career. But, you know, as a start, it's up there with what we've seen from guys like Roberts, Roden and others this season. You know, he's in tremendously exciting form at the moment.
And also, you've got to think, well, if he's in this sort of such form and none of the other wingers are really sort of nailing them, their colours to the mast, then he's almost one of the first names on the team sheet at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, but this goes back to what we were talking about earlier, doesn't it? You know, do you have to resist the urge to play him week in, week out at such a young age? Because you want to be sure that, you know, maybe come February, March, he's not completely, not burnt out, but he's not feeling some fatigue. You know, and he's able to, because ultimately, you want him to be able to produce what we've seen in the last three home games on a regular basis. So, you know, I'd be the first to say I was really surprised he didn't start at Villa, because he'd been man of the match in the previous game against Ipswich. But, you know, if it's with the notion that we look after him and we ensure that he's a great Swansea player for years to come and not just now in the short term, then, you know, it's hard to argue, because, you know, although Swansea are eighth, technically this is, you'd still very much class this as a rebuilding job, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
You're looking beyond just the game on the weekend. You know, you're having to deal with mid and longer term goals, both for the players and the team as a whole.
Good news this morning with the announcement of Joe Roden signing a new contract.
Yeah.
As you mentioned earlier, you know, one of the brightest youngsters they've got at the club has been brilliant so far this season. You also wrote in your report, your news article, that Conor Roberts and Matt Grimes were not too far away from agreeing extensions.
Yeah, that's as we understand it. That's what we know. That's what we've been led to believe by sources at the club and around the players themselves. So I mean, you know, look, getting Roden done, just getting one of them done, is, you know, a good tick in the box. You know, clearly, you know, in an ideal world, some of these players, these things would have been sorted beforehand, because, you know, you don't want to be running players into the last year of their contracts. No. But I think it's been particularly awkward around this season, because you've got a new manager, you have to allow him the time to assess what he's got at his disposal. And, you know, there's no point giving players longer contracts if 2 months down the line the manager decides, well, actually, I don't think this guy fits, you know, and you've locked yourself into 2 years of paying someone. And look, you know, you've only got to look at some of the contract extensions Swansea have handed out in recent years to know that they've got a few things wrong on that score. So, you know, this is the other end of that spectrum, if you like. So, you know, Roberts and Grimes, you know, both excellent, both players who are, you know, I think, just, you know, delighted that they are first team regulars. They're getting that opportunity. Maybe, you know, recognising that maybe at this stage of their careers, if they moved elsewhere, they might not be guaranteed that level of involvement. You know, and look, it's protection for the club. You're protecting the value of an asset, you know, in particular with Joe and Connor, guys that you have had on the books from the age of 8 or 9. And that you've invested time and resources in making the players they are now. You know, clearly, whatever happens to them in the future, you don't want to lose them for nothing. Mm-hmm. And for the players themselves, there's protection there, because, you know, I mean, God forbid that one of them were to break a leg, you know, seriously before signing a new contract. But, you know, you'd be in very uncertain territory then as a young footballer. You know, people tend to wait until you fit again, don't they? So, I think it makes sense on the side of all concerned, really. And, you know, every indication is that Roberts and Grimes will follow suit reasonably shortly. And, you know, I think if you were to look down the list of players who are out of contract next summer, there's a few more that will need to be addressed in quite short order too.
Yeah, they'll definitely need to be bringing those to the...
Van der Hoorn and Furrer, you know, they're among that number.
We touched on it earlier about Leighton's column. Some good points raised. He said, "Are Swansea really ready for a promotion push right now, or whether promotion would be good for them?" And I kind of do agree with him on a certain level. Would they be ready? As I said, as considering this is such a rebuilding job,
it's a really...
Because everyone obviously wants to be in the Premier League.
Exactly.
And that's the end goal.
And I'm sure the players want to be in the Premier League. It's difficult. I mean, I've always kind of felt that you don't get to choose when you get promoted. It almost chooses you. Mm. You know, if you are good enough, then you will end up where you're supposed to be. And if you are, if Swansea are supposed to be in the playoffs, that is where they will end up come May. And then what happens then? I mean, if you're a supporter and your team are in the mix, you want your team to go up. At heart, you want your team to be successful. You want your team to go up. But I think the point that Leighton makes, and I think it's a perfectly valid point, is that Swansea got themselves in such a mess towards the end of their time in the Premier League. Surely, to sort a lot of that out takes longer than 12 months. And I'd be inclined to agree. I don't think, whatever happens this season, I don't think Swansea get to next summer and we're all sat around going, there we are, everything's hunky-dory now and everything's fine.
Mm-hmm.
There are longer-term issues that need to be addressed. And I'm not sure one season would suddenly equip them to go straight back into the Premier League and make the sort of impact that they made when they went up under Brendan Rodgers in 2011. You know, you've got to have the foundations in place, and to a certain extent, you've got to have built on those foundations. And I think we're still very much in the process of setting the foundations of what Swansea are going to look like in the years moving forward. Hopefully, with Graham Potter and a lot of these young players, involved in that plan. But if we're sat here in May and Swansea are in a playoff semi-final, what would anyone want? You'd want them to go up. You're not going to want to be knocked out and not have your day at Wembley, are you? It's a really difficult one, isn't it? The bottom line is, from my perspective, I don't think you can't pick and choose, can you? If it's meant to happen, almost whether you're ready or not, it will happen. I think you only have to look at, don't want to mention Cardiff on the Swansea City podcast, but if you were to look at them last season, I'm not sure that they would necessarily have thought they were going to come up this year. But their efforts meant that, the league, the competition almost chooses you, doesn't it? They got to a point where it was almost more difficult for them not to go up than it was to go up, other than a little bit of mess of it at the end. But there are always those teams that are unheralded or it's unexpected, and they come from somewhere. They just put something together. Catching fire in a bottle, as they say, isn't it? Just something will click for you and it'll take you clear of the competition. I don't think Swansea are at that stage yet, but given how much better you think Swansea can be and their margin for improvement compared to other teams, could they be that side that puts a run together?
The league is so congested that if they were in the top half and the top 10 come February, March, and they went on a run of 6 or 7 games and they put 6 results together, they probably would be right in that mix.
It's really difficult, isn't it? I mean,
you don't want if you're in that position, you wouldn't want your team not to go for it.
And I think January is going to be interesting in that regard, isn't it? I think there's a lot of scepticism, quite rightly so, about if Swansea are in the top 6 in January, will there be some money put in to give Graham Potter and that squad a little bit more quality, a little bit more help, and make the difference? I don't think you can say with any certainty one way or the other, really. There were certainly no assurances of money to spend in January when we sat down with the owners in September. So I think that'll be as interesting a subplot, really, as anything over the next few months, is if Swansea are in the mix, what happens in January?
Yeah.
And that might give us a better idea over whether we are seriously talking about going back up at the first attempt, even though I think the general feeling has been to work to the longer term. But if the opportunity is there, are you really going to pass it up?
Okay, away at Rotherham this weekend. Is there any point trying to predict a title?
No,
is there any point at all?
Absolutely not. I mean,
Is this a sort of game though where you could maybe think, right, perhaps someone like Cameron Carter-Vickers might be suited? And also,
but would you leave it, you know, again?
But is this the sort of game where you think, right, although Daniel James is in great form, perhaps leave him on the bench for this one?
I wouldn't personally. But if you're asking me if Graham Potter, yeah, well, I've got absolutely no idea. I mean, look, I know Rotherham are, you know, they're a fair way down the table, but I mean, if you look at some of their results, particularly at home, they've taken points off some big sides. You know, they've taken points off Middlesbrough for one. So you know, they're not going to be a soft touch. You know, they're not going to roll over. You know, be like what Potter said about the Villa game. You're not going to turn up, just play some nice football and walk off with 3 points. You know, yeah, they will make it difficult for you. So, I mean, on form, purely on form, you would say, you know, Dan James has to start. You would say that Celina has to play at number 10. I think you could make a strong case for Grimes and Fulton being the two deep midfielders. But who knows? Yeah. You know, who knows? I mean, there is, you know, because of players like Grimes and Norton being able to play in different positions, you know, there is that sort of versatility and that adaptability. You know, might he put Courtney Baker Richardson in and drop McBurney deeper? You know, try and stretch play that way to create more room to sort of get the ball down and pass. So, very, very hard to know.
Who knows? We don't.
I think this weekend's quite a big opportunity. You know, Swansea's away record's not that bad. It's 2 wins and 3 draws from 7 games. You know, that's not bad going, really. But when you've put back-to-back wins together, I think if you could back that up at Rotherham, and you then go to Bolton, you know, 3 wins on the trot, and you're just sort of picking up that momentum and you're getting on a bit of a roll. I mean, you could go into the international break in tremendous shape, really. So I think it's an interesting test. I think they needed the 2 wins at home. Can they now back it up with 2 good performances and 2 good results away from home?
On the road, yeah. Okay, well, we'll have all the reaction to that game and the one at Bolton on Wales Online. Just to let you know, you can get all your Swansea City news on our Twitter and Facebook accounts. I think the Twitter is at Swansea City Live, and if you just do a search for Swansea City Online and Facebook, our page will crop up. And yeah, we'll be back next week. Thanks.
Cheers.